Welcome to the Global Investor Podcast. The goal of this podcast is to offer investors and entrepreneurs insights and practical advice to dramatically improve the kinds of deals you invest in and the returns that you get. My name is James Evenson. I am one of the partners at Crown Private. If you're unfamiliar with OBRIS by Crown Private, we are a membership syndicate of investors. Our membership and community are built up of like-minded yet unique and adventurous individuals and family offices. Since we started OBRIS in 2012, we have developed quite a number of great global partnerships. One is with Control Risks. Control Risks is a specialist risk consultancy. Their team helps clients build organizations that are secure, compliant, and resilient in an age of ever-changing risk and connectivity. Today, I'll be interviewing Gavin Strong, Control Risk Director for Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. Gavin is based in Mexico City and has his feet on the ground assessing risks for corporate customers throughout Central America and the Caribbean. A little background on Gavin for you. He earned his MA in Latin American Studies from the Institute for the Study of the Americas at the University of London. He also has a BA in Ancient History from the University of Newcastle upon Tyne and a diploma in Political Analysis from the Instituto Tecnológico Autónomo de México. Gavin has lived in Nicaragua and Panama and traveled extensively throughout the Americas before moving to Mexico. He's a regular contributor for media outlets, including CNN, the Financial Times, Al Jazeera, and the Mexican national newspaper Reforma. We are very happy to have Gavin with us today. Just a note that he is joining us at our Panama Global Investor Summit from the 15th to the 19th of July. So the timing of having this conversation with Gavin is of particular interest as we look at risk in the world as well, assessing risk and the risks in the world, as well as focusing in on Latin America. So, all right, hey, welcome, Gavin. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks very much, James. No, thanks very much for the opportunity to speak to you.
Where do we find you this morning?
So I'm currently in Control Risks office in Mexico City in the Polanco neighborhood. It's a great part of town. We've got a lovely view over Chapultepec Park, so we can actually see the giraffes from where we are. Unfortunately, we are on the 20th floor, so that does mean that when there's earthquakes and the like, it's can be a little bit scary. But aside from that, no, it's a great part of the world to be in.
Absolutely. So you have a front and center view of the castle up on the hill. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. I'd like to start with a bit about your own, how your own background shapes how you view the world. Would you care to tell us how your experience and background shape how you see the world?
Sure. So as I'm sure you can tell from my accent, I'm originally from the UK. And I guess growing up, my father was in the army, so we actually spent a lot of time sort of traveling around the world. And I guess as a result of that, it's no surprise that I've actually been an expat for quite some time. So I've actually now been based in Latin America for 10 years, slightly scared to say. And I've been in Mexico City now for seven. And in terms of how that sort of impacted upon my view of the world, well, I guess certainly my view of the world has changed over the last few years. There certainly wasn't an element of which I kind of saw the world through the rose-tinted glasses of a Brit who thought that the British Empire was marvelous and did more good than bad. That sort of position has definitely changed as a result of spending time in emerging markets and developing countries, including countries that were once part of the British Empire. So I think all of that has certainly had a pretty profound impact on how I view the world today.
And what about just everyday life? You spend your work day looking at the fires that are burning throughout the world. and in your locale as well. How does that affect you as you're walking around the streets of Mexico City or wherever else you go in the world on a daily basis?
Sure. I mean, I think from a personal perspective, I'm certainly acutely aware of how fortunate I am, how fortunate I've been to have the opportunity to travel across the world, but particularly extensively in Latin America. And I think as well to actually live here, it gives me a sort of almost an added dimension to my experience here in this particular region. And I think from a professional perspective, that's quite useful in terms of my relationship with clients. We do have very strong relationships with sort of companies, local companies, but we do a lot of work with foreign clients. So investors, for example, from the US who are looking at opportunities in Mexico or the rest of Latin America. And I think at times, whilst they value the sort of on the ground knowledge that our local staff have, I think they also at times enjoy the opportunity to perhaps speak with someone that has a similar background and get their insight as to what it's like living and working in this part of the world.
Gotcha. Control risks is all about helping corporations and other clients mitigate risk and to make choices to protect their business, their people, their products. Can you tell us about the business of risk analysis? What does that entail?
Sure. Well, look, I think in the first place, it does require a kind of academic level of understanding of our market. So, you know, clients that interact with our analysts, people like me, will find that, you know, we have a sort of master's that's very much focused in the part of the world that we look at. And it's extremely important, so I think, to have that sort of basis of knowledge. But I think we also couple that with proven on the ground experience. So certainly from the perspective of control risk, we're not desktop analysts. We're people that spend a lot of time on the ground with our clients, with our sources. That might be in more of the sort of challenging parts of Mexico from a security perspective, so states like Tamaulipas, Guerrero, or it could be in sort of emerging markets with or frontier markets within the region. So I personally spend a lot of time in countries like Guatemala, Nicaragua, Guyana. And I think that's where we can provide really useful insights. So when a client comes to us with a particular problem that they want us to help them solve, it doesn't matter where in the region they're looking at, we can help. And we can help because we've got on the ground in country experience.
Tell us about what you're assessing. How are you assessing, or more the what than the how? But
well, a lot of that obviously depends on the profile of the client, whether they're simply an investor looking at a particular opportunity, whether it's a company that perhaps already has operations in a specific country and is concerned about certain issues, or whether it's a particular project owner or operator, someone who perhaps has just bought a greenfield site and is setting up some sort of renewable energy project from the construction to the operation, and then perhaps at some point the sale of that asset. But in sort of general terms, we look, I guess, at political risk is a massive focus. So that can be simply looking at political stability, what's happening in terms of the government. Is it able to perform its duties? Is there any chance that there might be some sort of coup d'etat, which we have unfortunately seen in the region in the last decade or so, to more specific risks that companies have to deal with. So is there a change in the regulatory environment that will make it more challenging to operate in a particular sector? What's happening in terms of corruption trends, is the political class doing what is necessary to improve things from that respect? And actually the unintended consequences is a crackdown on corruption, fomenting sort of political instability. So that's something, you know, that we've seen in Guatemala in recent years. And then some of the more sort of tangible risks. So looking at the security environment, what are the sort of threats that companies face depending on where they're operating in a particular country? And what are the sort of measures that they need to put in place to mitigate those risks? And then a particularly important issue that sometimes gets overlooked, but above all in a country like Mexico, where the headline issue is insecurity, is the sort of social side of things. So what if for example, it's a mining company, what are the sort of issues they may face in terms of community pushback? Is there a legacy of environmental degradation that they need to be aware of? Are there certain expectations among local communities in terms of job creation and sort of factors like that? So it's a very broad gamut of risks and issues, and we don't necessarily look at all of them at the same time. It's very dependent on the client. So yeah, I think of that in a nutshell is the kind of things that from a risk perspective.
Can you give us a few examples of projects that you've done recently? You don't have to divulge the names of the clients.
Sure. So in Mexico, a lot of our recent work has been around the change in government at the sort of federal government level. So as I'm sure you would have heard, in the US, there's been a lot of noise surrounding our new president, AMLO. And in particular, the sorts of policies that he might implement that may have an impact on foreign investors in Mexico, particularly in the energy sector. So a lot of the work that we've been doing there has been looking specifically at, has been in the sort of sphere of policy monitoring. What are the sort of things that the president and his administration are saying and doing, and what does that mean for our clients? But then it's not just the monitoring side of things, it's then how do we use that information to support our clients going forward? So we have had companies that are facing contractual disputes and a concern not only that their contracts might be cancelled, but also what implications that may have for their other assets in the country. So there's work around sort of political stakeholder analysis, identifying who are the key decision makers within the federal government, as well as state-owned companies like Pemex, and how they should look to engage with them going forward. It's not necessarily lobbying per se, but it is a way of supporting and making sure that they know what the motivations of a particular political official may have. In Central America, a lot of our work has been around political instability. So the ongoing political crisis in Nicaragua, what implications does that have for companies in terms of business continuity? Do they have evacuation plans in place just in case things deteriorate so significantly that they can't keep personnel on the ground? We've done more interesting work in neighboring Honduras, kind of similar in that it's focused on political stability, but looking specifically at the implications of protests and what that means from a kind of supply chain risk perspective, whether companies can get their product from A to B, whether employees can travel to work on a daily basis and be safe, that kind of thing. And then an issue that we're looking at the region as a whole is the sort of imposition of sanctions by the international community, above all the US government, on particular public officials and companies across Central America and the potential implications that that has. And then finally, we're doing increasing amount of sort of work in the Caribbean, and not just the islands, but some of the CARICOM countries like Belize, Guyana, Suriname, around sort of market entry. So it's not always about risk, it's also about opportunity. And we have seen increased interest from clients looking at the region's more sort of frontier markets. So we're doing a lot of work in that space as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, last question regarding the kind of general concept of control risks and what you do. What do you enjoy most about your work?
The people, hands down. Both the people that I work with in our office here in Mexico, but also the sources that I use and the contacts that I have on the ground across the region. The journalists in Nicaragua who's sending me WhatsApps on a daily basis telling me where protests are happening, where the security forces are deploying personnel, to the academic in Guatemala City who's giving me intel into what potentially will happen in terms of the government and whether they'll, you know, stay in power until the end of their term in office or whether we can see some sort of ouster take place. And then also our clients. I particularly like the client engagements where we're given the opportunity to support them throughout the project life cycle. So it's not simply we need a political risk report, please send us that and that's the end of the relationship. No, we're looking at a potential opportunity in this market. Initially, we need a market entry threat assessment, but from there, we want you to help us implement our risk mitigation plans. And those, I think, are the most sort of rewarding relationships because there you not only are developing a sort of business relationship, but also a personal relationship that ultimately can turn into friendship. So I think, yeah, certainly the people, I think, is the best thing about our work.
Great. And Control Risk has folks like yourself and teams like what you lead all over the world, correct? So what I'd like to do is I'd like to shift over to looking at how you and your colleagues are viewing the world today. So an open-ended question that I will start with is, how does the world look to you at this point in time?
It looks pretty uncertain. I think a lot of that emanates from what's happening in the White House. I think there's a sort of tentative change in the world order, and some of that possibly predates President Trump taking power, but certainly I think his actions and policies to date have probably put that process into fast forward, and I think that's most noticeable in terms of the relationship between the US and China. And I think from a geopolitical perspective, that's obviously fermenting a great deal of uncertainty. But I think as well, that's having tangible implications for companies, particularly those that are exposed in both markets. And that's certainly something that we're keeping a close eye on. I think there are other ways in which that sort of changing world order is manifesting itself. I think we're seeing India flex its wings a lot more sort of proactively than it was in the past. And indeed, it's interesting, you know, looking at that situation from a British perspective of how the relationship has changed between the UK and India, particularly as the UK tries to find a new place in the world as Brexit looms. Who knows when that will happen? Who knows exactly when that will happen, but it is on the horizon. But it is and I'll be the first to admit it as a Brit that perhaps our position in the world is not as significant as it once was, but it is nonetheless an indication of how the world order is changing. And I think there bring it back to Latin America, because it's difficult for me to look at the world and not take Latin America into consideration. There is certainly an opportunity, I think, for some of the region's bigger powers, most notably Mexico and Brazil, to become more assertive when it comes to sort of global leadership. Unfortunately, from the sort of Mexico perspective, I don't see that happening under the current administration.
Why is there an opportunity for them, and why would you recommend that they assert leadership?
I think the main reason why there's an opportunity, because I think the United States sort of traditional position as being seen as the world, not only the world global superpower, but also sort of a global leader in terms of Sure. So I think there's an opportunity for some of the larger powers within Latin America to become a bit more assertive, both in terms of regional leadership and also global leadership. Certainly taking advantage of the fact that the US's position in that respect has been undermined in recent years. And I think countries like Mexico and Brazil can perhaps forge a new path without always sort of deferring to the leadership of the US.
So it's really an opportune time because there's so much uncertainty and amongst at the top, who's going to be end up on top. So those who are further down in the hierarchy that has been established, and it's continuously changing hierarchy, that there's opportunity for those folks to assert themselves. I like hearing that view. I think that's actually a great view, because it gives some more hope, it gives additional hope for other countries besides the most dominant ones. Why India though? What's happening that's causing them to emerge as they are?
Well, in the first instance, it's a humongous country with a massive population. It's historically had a pretty tense relationship with China, and I think going forward it will want to sort of project a stronger image of itself, particularly as it sort of consolidates its position as one of the sort of world's economic powerhouses. And it goes back to the point I made about the changing relationship between the UK and India. It's interesting that I think over the course of the next year or so, India probably will replace the UK in terms of the size of its economy. So that in itself, I think it is an interesting reflection of where India is going in that respect. So that's certainly, I think, from a control risk perspective as well, it's a market where we already have a very significant presence there. We have offices in Delhi and Mumbai, and part of that reflects the sort of increasing client interest there.
Interesting. Yeah, I can remember several years ago reading an analysis that compared China and India in terms of becoming a dominant power in the world, and an advantage that India had was the not that it's a slightly smaller population, but a significantly younger population. That I don't know what the average age is, or the median age, but they have a significant workforce and brilliant education system as well. Not that China doesn't. Looking at the map behind you, and it's color coded for regions of areas of concern. Where do you see some really good things happening in the world? Where no one needs you and your services, Gavin?
Wow. Well, look, I think it's difficult to say whether I think even in parts of the world where there are obvious opportunities, there's still an element of risk. And look, I mean, looking outside of Latin America, it's difficult for me to look past, a country like India in terms of the opportunity in a variety of sectors for investors to look at. I think that's big on our sort of one to watch. We had, I guess, previously there was some optimism about, countries like Iran as potentially markets that were going to open up at some point in inverted commas. But I think, unfortunately, going back to what I was talking about in terms of some of the challenging geopolitical dynamics, I think things in that respect are looking a little bit trickier than perhaps they were three or four years ago, unfortunately. But let's be honest, Jason, and I'm extremely biased because of where I'm based, but I do genuinely think there are lots of great opportunities in this part of the world. And it's difficult for me to look past Mexico, despite some of the negative headlines surrounding the security situation and the clear challenges as a result of the change in government. There are lots and lots of opportunities, providing you do your due diligence and providing you take time to make sure you have the sort of requisite mitigation plans in place. But I think as well, as you well know, the world is getting smaller and smaller. And so I think there are lots of interesting opportunities in more sort of frontier markets. So for example, in Central America, I guess we have sort of two main focuses of our Central America business, certainly Panama, from a financial services and sort of legal technologies perspective, but also Guatemala for us is certainly one to watch. The potential there in the regional context is pretty significant. Guatemala is already dominating the sort of regional electricity grid, to the point that Guatemala actually exports electricity to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And I think in that context, particularly given that the current Mexican president is very keen to develop the south of Mexico, I think there are lots of interesting opportunities there. As I mentioned, in terms of frontier markets, I think in the Caribbean as well, Guyana's obviously garnered a lot of attention for the massive oil finds there, but I think there are opportunities in some of the larger markets, like the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, whether it's energy, both oil and gas and sort of power generation, or mining, hospitality services, financial services. There are a lot of things companies and investors can look at across the region.
All right. And yet we know, as promising as they are, that every country has significant risks that need to be addressed. Before we drill further into Latin America and kind of the reason for this podcast is that you'll be speaking with us in Panama just about a week and a half from now. But before we go there, I'd like you to tell me, what are a few spots in the world that just really concern you? And it doesn't necessarily need to be geographic spots. It's what are the three biggest concerns that you have right now?
Sure. I'm afraid to say that one of my biggest concerns is the Trump administration and the fact that it's likely that Trump could win another term in office. So I'm concerned what implications that will have, not only for geopolitics, but I also think, and this is my second concern, the attitude towards migration and migrants across the world. It's definitely a sort of hot topic of conversation in Mexico at the moment, given that that's such a key issue between the Mexican and the US government, and also indeed between those two governments and countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras. And I'm concerned that sometimes the sensitivities around that particular issue, and unfortunately some of the less than savory opinions that people, including in the political class, have on this issue, sometimes blinds us to coming up with an effective policy, long-term strategy to deal with the issue of migration. So looking at particularly Central American migration to the United States, because let's not forget, actually Mexican migration to the US has been falling piecemeal over the last few years. So we're really looking at the issue of migration from the Northern Triangle of Central America to the United States. And frankly, the Trump administration's solution to that problem is simply making it more difficult for migrants to make that journey. Whereas actually we should be looking at the long-term root causes. So insecurity in those countries, lack of economic issue, opportunities, and inherent systemic issues within the sort of political system of those countries. And some The sad thing to say is some progress have been made in that respect. So if you look at what's happened in Guatemala in terms of the crackdown on corruption there in the last 3 or 4 years, there were tangible gains. Indeed, a president was forced out of office off the back of corruption allegations. But it seems a lot of that has been reversed, mainly because there's been mixed signals being sent from the White House in that respect. So that's something that concerns me. I think another massive concern of mine, and indeed it's an existential threat to humanity. I apologize if that sounds a little bit dramatic, but it's true. And that's climate change and the world's response to it. It's a problem of our own making, and I'm concerned. I'm not a parent yet, but it's something on the horizon. I am concerned by the future of the world, because I feel that perhaps the damage has been done, and any solutions that may come in the coming years may be too little, too late. So that's certainly a massive concern. And then finally, perhaps a little bit niche, and it's very much a personal concern of mine, and not necessarily representative of how control risk views the world. I am concerned about social media. I think for all the good it does, there are a lot of sort of negative consequences that I think need to be properly looked into. I think I guess I'm the sort of older end of the, I'm 35, so I'm the older end of the millennial spectrum. So I should probably be fully embracing social media and all of that. But I am concerned that it can drive narcissism and insecurity amongst sort of younger parts of the population. So I guess that's something that concerns me as well.
I think that's fair. You know, I think the first two that you brought up, I'm sure you're going to bring those up when you're speaking with us in Panama. I think that you'll actually create a bit of a good discussion there, because we have we'll have folks present who are individuals present who are from all over the world and have their own views of migration and as well as views of how they see the U.S. administration, whichever administration is, how they affect the world. And I think you might get a little bit of pushback as well. We're generally libertarian in our makeup. Definitely some well thought out opinions, however, so I'll look forward to that. Before we wrap up, I'd actually like to drill into Panama specific. You have been speaking a bit about Latin America, and clearly that is where your strength lies and your experience lies. We'll be in Panama, one of the most promising spots on the planet right now. To give us your impressions of Panama, and let's start with what do they have going for them besides a brand new administration and a lot of optimism, and then we'll dig into what are some of the risks there.
Yeah, well, look, it's certainly within the Central American context, it's kind of an oasis of sort of public security and political stability. We definitely haven't seen the same sort of political upheavals in Panama that we've seen in other parts of the region. Although it is interesting to note that, I'm maybe contradicted by one of the delegates in a couple of weeks' time, but as I understand it, since the sort of return to democracy in Panama, in inverted commas, the incumbent party has never won the general election. So there is instability in that. Every sort of 5 years, when there's a general and presidential election, there's a change in administration. So that does obviously imply some sort of instability and uncertainty, certainly from a policy perspective. But I think broadly speaking, it's a country where investors on the whole are looked after. It's a favorable place to do business. It's a safe place to do business, which I think is important for, in this day and age, is important for every company, whether you're a Panamanian company or an international company. It's important to know that your employees can travel to and from work and feel safe. So I think that, that's that's the sort of the positive side of things. And as well, Panama is a country that over the last, beyond the last decade, I would say, has enjoyed persistently high levels of economic growth. It's very much the sort of standout performer in that respect. And I guess not only in the region, but I think in terms of globally, I struggle to think off the top of my head of many countries that have enjoyed such consistently high levels of economic growth over the last 10 years. And that was indeed, even during the sort of global economic downturn, Panama actually proved pretty resilient to sort of external economic headwinds, which is kind of remarkable given that it's a country that very much makes full use of its position as a sort of focal point of global trade because of the Panama Canal, but also as a sort of regional financial, well, global indeed, sort of financial and logistics hub. So clearly its sort of economic fundamentals are in a pretty solid place. So that's certainly a good thing from a business perspective.
Why do you think they weathered the financial crisis so well?
I think because whatever happens in Panama from a political perspective, it's an investor friendly destination. So whilst there may be a downturn in canal traffic, for example, which obviously remains the sort of lifeblood of the Panamanian economy, there are always companies looking to invest significant amounts of money there, and it's remarkable. Certainly every time I travel there, the amount of development that's going on, you know, the construction of high rises, the development of sort of very bespoke business parks that often have quite favorable sort of tax regimes. I think all of those sort of factors, coupled with, you know, the fact that, you know, it's a politically stable country, it's a relatively safe country. I think all of those things help it sort of mitigate that, you know, those sort of wider economic issues.
Yeah. I have a much shallower understanding than you have of it, but I tend to agree with you on that. And just this morning, I had a call with someone from Panama Pacifico, which is one of their economic development zones. And they, this former U.S. Air Force base that they're developing, they have almost 250 foreign companies just based in that small section of Panama City. And it really is promising. I find it interesting as I interact with people now anticipating the event, and they think of Latin America or Central America with concern. Maybe it seems most people don't really know, that I know, don't really know what a safe haven, not haven, but a safe spot and promising spot Panama is. And I think it's also quite interesting that I think it was Gallup that put out a report just recently of, I'm going to make this really shallow, but the happiness index in the world, and Panama came out number two. The other Central American countries, most were also in the top 10 or so. It's absolutely fascinating. Well, I think that we should probably wrap up. So I'm going to ask one more question of you, and that is, let's go back to control risks. How do you think that control risks positively influences the world?
Sure. I think, well, in the first instance, the relationship that we have with our clients is key. So we're not only helping them mitigate risk, we're actually helping them identify opportunities. And in that respect, it means not only supporting clients to ensure that they do things well, but also that they do things right in the correct fashion. So when they're looking at particular opportunities or particular projects, are they, you know, managing as they should be their environmental and social footprint? Are they implementing robust compliance mechanisms? And I think most importantly, are they providing the right support in terms of duty of care to their employees? I think if we can continue supporting clients and companies across the world to do that, that has to be a positive influence.
Yeah, excellent. Well, hey, I look forward to spending a few days with you in Panama in a very short period of time and having you provoke us with your thoughts on the world and Latin America. Thanks very much for joining us, Gavin.
Not at all, James. Thank you so much again for the opportunity to speak with you. And I look forward to seeing you and the rest of the team in Panama in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely. Thank you. If you are listening to or watching this podcast before the 15th of July, you might want to consider joining us in Panama, where Gavin will be speaking about risk and assessing risk for companies and for companies that we invest in. You can head over to obrisinvest.com/Panama2019 and register to join us. If you're an active investor, accomplished and accredited, I recommend that you consider Obris by Crown Private. To do so, head over to obrisinvest.com to learn about our group. And we are currently welcoming new members to join at this time. Our members and guests are an amazing group of self-made and accomplished investors. They come from 15 countries and counting, and really a wide variety of professions. We share the common pursuit of surrounding ourselves with great people in great places and gaining significant returns in investing. Thank you for joining me this week. See you in Panama.